Welcome back, True Crime Army. I am your host, Margot, and this is Military Murder, a show where I focus on crimes committed by military members and veterans. But don't worry, you don't have to know anything about the military to listen, I promise. You just have to be a true crime enthusiast, and if that's you, welcome home. Today's story has been all over the true crime scene in the last several years, especially since Netflix released its documentary titled Killer Sally. While many of you have begged me to cover her case, I wanted to let the media attention the Netflix documentary brought settle down before covering it. And now, since it's Women's History Month, I figured it was as good a time as any to tell you the story of a woman who once killed. But the question is, was she a murderer? Was she a battered woman who killed to avoid her own death? Or was she a scorned wife? I have a feeling that many of you might come to different conclusions after hearing today's story. Join me today as I tell you the story of Marine veterans Ray and Sally McNeil. Now, let's dig in.
Military Murder is an independent project and is not endorsed by the Department of Defense or any military component. The views expressed are those of the host. The content of this podcast is not meant to be legal or medical advice. Warning, this episode contains graphic details of murder and is not suitable for young listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Sally Marie Dempsey grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania. She grew up in a violent household, whether it was her biological father beating her mother or her stepfather beating her, Sally couldn't escape the violence. So she turned to something that she could control, athletics. Sally excelled at swimming, diving, and track and field. And after high school, she figured she would make a really good gym teacher. She went to college, but halfway through, she ran out of money. And as she looked for a plan B, the Marine recruiters came a-knocking. Considering Sally had a brother in the Marines and a few uncles that had war stories of their own, she figured, why not? Now, I can say this, but Marines are badass. But Lady Marines are badass, capital B, capital A. Anyway, Sally was a Marine and she could hold her own among the male population. While in the Marines, Sally failed to obey the almighty rule, never fall in love at your first duty assignment. Ha ha, guilty. Anyway, Sally met another Marine named Anthony Loden, and they were smitten, so much so that they tied the knot and went on to have two beautiful children, Shantina and John. But despite getting ahead in life as a Marine, Sally couldn't move beyond a life of violence. And when her husband began to display signs of physical abuse, Sally left Anthony. Sally apparently got pregnant by another man and had a third child. It was during this time that the Marine Corps transferred Sally to California, Camp Pendleton to be specific. It should be noted that Sally and Anthony were officially divorced. Sally got custody of the two older kids, and she gave the youngest child up for adoption. After the divorce, Anthony failed to be an active part of his two kids' lives. And it was when Sally arrived in California that she got really into women's bodybuilding. So it's the late 80s, so bodybuilding was still mostly a man's sport. And many today even will argue that bodybuilding is still a man's sport. But I don't agree. Sally was known around the bodybuilding scene among the Marines. And it's during this time that Sally's friend wanted to introduce her to another Marine by the name of Ray McNeil. Sally and Ray were both bodybuilders, they were both sergeants, and Ray had just arrived from an assignment in Japan. Single Sally was like, oh yes, introduce me. And when Sally first laid eyes on Ray, she said it was lust at first sight. He was a big, brawny hunk of a man with muscles everywhere. Sally took Ray out for a test drive, and the more she got to know her fellow Marine, the more and more she realized that he would make a great stepfather to her two kids. While they dated, Sally learned that Ray was born in North Carolina. He was abandoned at a young age by his mother and raised by his aunt. Ray, just like Sally, was very athletic. He was all conference and all metro in high school football. Ray joined the Marines out of high school and even played football for them for a while. By the time Sally met Ray, he had been bodybuilding for approximately 4 years. And he wasn't just dabbling in bodybuilding. He was all in. He was committed. Well, Sally was hooked on Ray, and despite a few red flags like his wandering eye, the couple was married 3 months after dating in 1987. They moved into an apartment together with the kids off post, and the kids loved Ray, so much so that they called him dad, and he was their dad. By the time they got married, Sally had a few fitness competitions under her belt, having taken fourth place in February of 1987 at the Armed Forces Bodybuilding Championship. But Ray was way ahead of her because he had been competing for a lot longer. But in 1990, the couple both competed in the Armed Forces Bodybuilding Championship. And guess what? They both took first place in their categories, which is an amazing feat. They were the first dual military couple to win their events at the same competition. There is money to be made in men's bodybuilding, and Ray wanted to focus on his body and competing. Sally felt some sort of way because she would have liked to focus on her as well, like her body and her bodybuilding. But money didn't come easy for the women's bodybuilding sport. So in 1991, Ray left behind his military career to focus 100% of his efforts on bodybuilding. But if you've ever spoken to a bodybuilder before, you know that the money doesn't just start coming in. It takes work and years and years and years of work. So while the initial marriage seemed like a dream made in heaven, after Ray left the Marines, Sally became the main house earner, and money was tight. Ray picked up a gig as a bouncer at nights to help bring in money, but they were barely making ends meet. Sally's kids remembered going dumpster diving for cans just to turn them in for money. It was definitely not the life that Sally envisioned when she first said I do to her amber, green-eyed, dimpled, million-dollar smile of a husband. But Ray was putting in the work at the gym and in the kitchen, and in May of 1991, he swept the California State Bodybuilding Championship. The North County Times reported that Ray McNeil was so far ahead of his competition, the other guys didn't stand a chance. Ray's chest measured in at 55 inches, his biceps were 20 inches, and he had whopping 29-inch calves. He weighed in at 235 pounds and was 5 feet 10 inches tall. Just to shock you just a little bit, the North County Times reported that Ray could bench 505 pounds and squat 700 pounds. He was a monster, eating approximately 300 grams of protein a day. With the California sweep under his belt, Ray was now prepared to compete at the North American Championship. During this competition, Ray would be competing to go pro or professional. In the bodybuilding world, they call this getting your pro card. Well, in August of 1991, Ray McNeil won the competition. But I would like to point out that once you go pro, the competition changes significantly because now you're competing against the cream of the crop. And like everything, there were so many professional bodybuilders that it didn't really mean anything unless he won the Mr. Olympia competition. By now, Ray was feeling himself. He wasn't bringing in a ton of money, to be honest, but he felt that he was getting closer to his goal. And he had also had his eyes set on acting. So he would occasionally participate in open mic nights at random comedy clubs around town. Sally was not the type of woman to sit around trying to be kept. And anyway, Ray wasn't the one who was going to be keeping her. So in order to bring in more money for the family and to maintain her protein-eating monster of a husband, Sally had a side hustle as well. She performed at strength competitions, and Sally was a beast. Well, I'd like to take this time to tell you all about fetishes. I know, hear me out. Apparently, there are people out there in this world who are into different things. Some like handcuffs and bondage, and others, well, they get turned on by watching women wrestle. It was during one of Sally's strength competitions that a man approached her and asked if she would be interested in wrestling for him. He produced these Amazon women type videos. The man told Sally that the videos were all choreographed, so basically it was acting, but they were semi-erotic content. While I am sure at first Sally was like, what in the hell? If you hang around long enough with the bodybuilding community, you know, they do some pretty weird stuff. So Sally was game. Ray knew all about these erotic videos, and honestly, so long as it brought in money, Ray McNeil didn't really care. And the wrestling videos paid well, $50 an hour, and it definitely beat the Marine pay that Sally was making. After starring in the videos, Sally, the savvy businesswoman, realized that if she cut out the middleman, she could rake in even more money. So, Sally left and began her own video business. On top of videos, some men paid her extra to wrestle Sally off screen. Now, I know what you're thinking. Was she doing more than just wrestling these men? Well, Sally claims it wasn't like that, but I'll leave it at that. Oh, and it was through these wrestling videos that Sally got the nickname Killer Sally. That nickname would go on to bite her in the butt much later. In 1993, Sally decided to cut her ties with the Marines and she went off on her own. The video business was doing well and Sally was still competing, but she wasn't able to place high enough to compete with the pros. Now, break. The documentary Killer Sally doesn't really get into Sally's time in the Marines much, but as reported by other sources, Sally didn't do well in the Marines. She had frequent outbursts at work, she had anger issues, and often lashed out at her colleagues. It is stated that when Sally left the Marines, it was because she was not allowed to re-enlist. All right, let's get back to 1993. That same year in 1993, according to the Killer Sally documentary, Ray qualified for the Mr. Olympia competition. Now, this is big time, and it would require a lot of work. Ray went hard day and night, but in the end, in 1993, he placed 15th at Mr. Olympia. And this loss must have been embarrassing, and Ray didn't take it well. He continued to train, and in 1995, while he was preparing for the September Mr. Olympia again, it is reported that Ray was on 5 different types of steroids. Some side effects of steroids are, and I just randomly put this list together from online sources like Mayo Clinic, but some of the side effects are fluid retention, difficulty sleeping, skin changes, irritability, mood swings, aggression, and even depression. And well, we've all heard of roid rage, and roid rage is real. While Sally admitted to being head over heels for Ray, she eventually confessed that he wasn't a saint. In fact, despite leaving the father of her kids for being abusive, there was something about Ray that didn't allow her to leave him despite the abuse. You see, Sally said that Ray began abusing her 3 days after their nuptials. On that day in 1987, Sally said that Ray punched her in the face and busted her lip. Ray immediately apologized, promising Sally that he would never hit her again. But he did, and it happened again and again and again. It is reported that during their marriage, Ray had broken Sally's toe, he had broken her nose, her hand, her tailbone, and a rib. And Ray also raped his wife. Sally, having survived and witnessed violence her entire life, figured that she would give Ray a chance. She thought to herself that if she stayed, maybe she could get him to love her enough to stop hurting her. And with that came the discovery that Ray had been having multiple affairs. But Sally stayed. And sadly, when Sally was gone for business, Ray would turn his aggression on his stepkids, beating both John and Shantina. The kids also witnessed Ray's abuse of their own mother. Every time there was violence, Sally thought to herself, well, it can't get any worse than this. But then Ray started taking steroids. The thing with abusive relationships is that despite none of the close friends noticing what is going on, there's always one entity that knows: the police. In 1990, after Ray and Sally won the Armed Forces Championship, Sally got a temporary restraining order against her husband, Ray, because on July 3rd, he punched her in the mouth, bashed her in the head, and threw her on the floor. The case might have continued, except neither Sally nor Ray showed up for the court hearing, so the case was dismissed. And the couple stayed together. Another person who knew what was going on behind closed doors all too well was the couple's apartment manager. Sally would often contact the manager to let him know that Ray damaged another wall in the house. And sometimes the manager would see a bruised up Sally. And sadly, there were a few times while the couple were both still in the Marines where people actually saw Ray knocking Sally around in the base gym parking lot and kicking her, yet they did nothing. And Ray was known for having a short fuse around his friends, so people knew never to get on Ray's bad side. It was as Ray was getting ready for the 1995 Mr. Olympia competition that Sally recalled hearing that a female bodybuilder was strangled to death by her boyfriend. Upon hearing this news, Sally snapped into reality. She realized that she might be next. Ray was often putting his hands around her neck and squeezing, and maybe one day she thought that he would squeeze the life out of her. She had to get out, and that was when Sally began making plans to return to Pennsylvania. She told the kids to be ready to leave at any moment. But first, Sally had to save up some money. It was Valentine's Day 1995, and it was about 10:40 p.m. when the 911 operator got a call. It was Sally McNeil. She frantically told the operator, "I just shot my husband because he just beat me up." As Sally provided her address, the operator heard someone in the background say, "Why did you shoot me?" Sally then responded, "I told you that I wasn't taking your shit anymore." In the background, you could also hear Sally's daughter yelling, "Dad, no, Dad!" When police arrived a few moments later, they found Ray 5 feet from the front door of the apartment. Ray was on his hands and knees, and Sally was in the kitchen. Ray was still alive and saying, "Why? Oh God, help me." When police looked at Ray, they noticed that his face from his nose down had been blown off. The police went over to Sally as medics tended to Ray, and Sally said that she shot her husband because he was beating on her. As medics looked over at Ray, he pointed to his stomach, and that's when they realized he had also been shot in the stomach and his liver was hanging out. There was nothing they could do for Ray at the apartment, so they immediately took him to the hospital. Sally was taken to the police station to be questioned, and they asked Sally to start from the beginning. "Tell us exactly what happened." And that was when Sally told the following story. That night, Ray told Sally that he was running to the store, the Price Club, to get some chicken for dinner. Sally knew that the Price Club closed at 8:30 p.m., so when Ray didn't show up until 10:30 p.m., she was a little tiffed. I mean, probably more than a little tiffed. The kids were asleep at this point, and Sally realized that Ray hadn't gone to the Price Club. He went to a more expensive chicken joint. Sally began giving Ray crap for spending excess money on groceries that they couldn't afford, and then Sally was like, "Where were you? Tell me the truth, were you with your girlfriend?" Because newsflash, Ray had a girlfriend. Sally then began to tell Ray that he looked like shit and wouldn't do well in the upcoming competition. Sally then told the cops that when she told Ray that, that's when he slapped her, pushed her to the floor, and started choking her. Sally used one of her wrestling moves to get away. She ran into her bedroom, loaded her 12-gauge shotgun, grabbed two shells, loaded one, pumped the gun, and ran to the kitchen. Ray was now in the kitchen cooking his expensive chicken. Sally yelled at Ray to never hit her again. And that's when she says he lunged at her. Sally admitted that she put the bullet right in his chest. Ray doubled over, but he came after Sally, so she claimed she loaded another shell, pumped the gun, and shot him in the face. Sally said she then ran outside, gave the gun to a neighbor, and then called 911. Sally told the police that Ray was roided out and his competition was a few months away. She admitted she had previously used steroids as well, but hadn't taken any in a few months. During the interview, police had news for Sally. Ray was dead. He did not survive his injuries. When Sally heard the news, she wept and yelled, "I didn't want it to be that way. I just wanted him to stop hitting me." The kids were also interviewed that night to see what they could remember. Shantina said that she went to bed a little before her dad got home. She heard the door open and Ray got home with grocery bags. She heard her mom and dad begin to argue. Then Shantina heard a smacking sound. Shantina jumped out of bed and ran to the living room where she saw her mom crying. Sally told Shantina to go back to her room, so she did. But she continued to listen intently, and that's when Shantina heard gag sounds. And then she suddenly heard rustling in the room next door, and that's where her mom's room was. And then Shantina heard a loud bang. Shantina was frightened. She grabbed a baseball bat in her room and ran to the living room. And that's when she saw her dad on the ground and Sally on the phone with 911. Now, although Shantina's story adds up with Sally's story, and to be honest, they hadn't had time to talk it through to kind of come up with the same story, authorities found that Sally's demeanor was concerning. They felt that Sally didn't really look sad. And there was a moment during her police interview where she was left in the interrogation room all by herself for a very long time. And Sally actually makes herself a little bed on the floor and falls asleep, which authorities felt that these were actions of a cold, calculated killer. But, if I may, not to defend Sally necessarily, but to defend us military folks and veterans, if you have ever served in the military, you tend to learn to fall asleep in just about any location and under the most stressful situations. So as I watched the Killer Sally documentary, the sleeping thing didn't cause me great concern, but it definitely made everyone else be like, let's dig into her story a little bit more. With nothing more to go on yet, Sally was booked for first-degree murder and her kids were later taken to Pennsylvania to live with her mom. During Ray McNeil's autopsy, it was determined that it was a shot to Ray's chest that killed him, although the shotgun blast to the face caused massive damage to his lower jaw and face. Toxicology reports would reveal that at the time of his death, Ray had been on 5 different types of steroids. Sally was also given a blood test, and it revealed that Sally actually also had steroids in her system, although it was only one kind. But in the end, steroids, it turned out, didn't play a big role in Sally's subsequent trial. Authorities went to work looking into the McNeils' background. While they were searching, they discovered that there were various accounts of Ray beating on Sally. But when they looked into Sally's history, they discovered that she had domestic abuse in her past as well as the perpetrator. The New York Daily News reported that Sally had been previously arrested for pulling a gun on her first husband and shattering his car windows. The same news outlet reported that Sally had dropped a 70-pound weight on Ray's car from a balcony while he was still inside the car. On another occasion, when cops showed up to check on Sally's kids, she got argumentative and began fighting with the cops, and they maced her in the face. One time, Sally was suspended from her fitness competitions because she whomped on a spectator, apparently some woman that Sally thought was having an affair with her husband. And in 1993, Sally assaulted a cop at a bar after she was told to stop dancing on tables. Sally's kids also witnessed a lot of aggression going both ways between Ray and Sally. Apparently, most of the fights surrounded infidelity. Sally would tell Ray to end his affairs, and he would just end it and find a new girlfriend. And well, at the time of Ray's death, he did actually have a side piece. Her name was Marianne. Ray met Marianne at the Gold's Gym, and after a few dates, they became a couple. In fact, one of Ray's good friends, DJ, believed that Ray was in love with this new girl. When authorities caught up with DJ, he told investigators that Ray had confided in him that he wanted to leave Sally to be with Marianne, and he had actually intended on spending Valentine's Day with Marianne. Oh, when authorities heard this, they wondered if Ray was now dead because of self-defense, or could it have been jealousy? Before trial, prosecutors had a crime scene reconstructionist go through the crime scene and pictures and see if Sally's story lined up with what she had told them. And the one thing that stood out to them was that there was a spent shell casing in her bedroom. This led authorities to believe that she shot Ray once in the living room / kitchen, then she returned to the bedroom to retrieve another shell before shooting Ray a second time. Authorities also had pictures of Sally's neck because, remember, she said that she had been strangled by Ray that night. Well, Sally had a scratch on her neck, but when they compared Ray's short fingernails with Sally's injuries, they were inconsistent, leading investigators to believe that the scratches on Sally's neck might have been self-inflicted. And then investigators learned that 5 days before Ray's death, Sally made a call to check on Ray's $100,000 life insurance policy, for which she was the sole beneficiary. And then, 2 days before Ray's death, Sally confirmed again, asking her family friend if the life insurance policy was still good. It turned out that family friend was the one that sold her the life insurance to begin with, or sold it to the couple. And then, on the day after Ray's death, from jail, Sally called her friend 4 times to ask about the insurance policy, and she also asked the friend to make a payment on the policy before it expired and lapsed. At this point in the investigation, things weren't looking too hot for Sally. Sally's trial for Ray's murder began a year to the date of his death, February 14, 1996. The prosecution opened by describing Sally as a bully and as the aggressor. They basically harped on the fact that she was too muscular to be a battered woman. Their theory of the case was that Ray got home on Valentine's Day and began cooking his chicken when angry Sally confronted him about spending the day with his girlfriend. They believe that Ray told her he was leaving her, and that made Sally angry. So she decided to kill him rather than let him leave her for another woman. The prosecutor believed that that was when Sally retrieved the gun with the one shell from her bedroom, shot him, but when that didn't kill him completely, she went back and got another shell to finish the job. And the prosecution were able to prove a lot of what they promised. In addition to the physical evidence, they brought a parade of witnesses who said Sally was the aggressor. She was violent, she fought any and all women who she thought were messing with her man, and she went after Ray with not only her fist, but other weapons like dumbbells. During the defense's turn to present evidence, they said, "Wait a damn minute. Look at Sally. Yeah, she is big for a woman, but she is nothing compared to big, brawny Ray McNeil." They argued that Sally had the right to use reasonable force to stop the beatings, to also stop the rapes, the sodomies, and the torture. The defense said that when Sally grabbed the gun that night, it was to scare Ray. But when he lunged at her, she had no other choice, kill or be killed. Sally's daughter, Shantina, who was 12 years old at the time of the trial, she testified to hearing her mother being choked and gagged. The defense thought the prosecutors were insane to think that Ray McNeil, a man who wasn't making any money, would leave his wife for another woman. Sally, the defense said, was Ray McNeil's meal ticket. During the trial, Sally's defense presented evidence of battered woman's syndrome and how Sally fit the bill. According to the defense and their experts, battered women's syndrome make battered people hypersensitive to perceived threats of danger. It should be noted that the prosecution's expert also agreed that Sally was a battered woman, but the prosecution's expert downplayed Sally's symptoms because Sally wasn't the, quote, typical woman. And what he meant by that was that Sally was too muscular to be abused. But the defense expert countered that by saying that women or persons who are often beaten may embody assaultive behaviors as a defense mechanism. Since Sally was claiming self-defense, she took the stand in her own defense. She testified to the same facts that she told the detectives the first time she was interviewed. When it was time for the jury to deliberate, they were confused. They had to decide if Sally was guilty, and if she was guilty, what was she guilty of? Was it first-degree murder and premeditated? Was she guilty of second-degree murder, which was kind of like heat of passion? Was she guilty of voluntary manslaughter in that maybe there was a little bit of self-defense, but maybe she used too much force? Or was she not guilty by reason of self-defense, often called perfect self-defense? After several days of deliberating, the jury returned a verdict. They found Sally McNeil guilty of second-degree murder, basically claiming it was a heat of passion murder. On April 19th, Sally was sentenced to 19 years to life with a four-year term for the firearm enhancement. Sally appealed her conviction, and although she was excited when her case was overturned, it was subsequently reinstated by the United States Supreme Court. Sally first became eligible for parole in 2011, but her parole requests were denied over and over again because the parole board didn't believe Sally was a battered woman, and they claimed she wasn't taking responsibility for her actions. After years of fighting the system, in 2020 at her parole hearing, Sally gave up. She finally was paroled after she basically told the board that it was her intent to kill her husband and she was sorry. She would later reveal on the Killer Sally documentary that she was forced to say those words because she just wanted to get out of prison. After her release from prison, Sally lived in the Veterans Transitional Center, a place to allow homeless veterans to integrate back into society. While living in the transition home, Sally met her current husband. After her release, Sally reconnected with her two adult kids, both of whom followed in their parents' footsteps and joined the military. Sadly, both adult kids revealed in the documentary that they suffered immensely without their parents, and due to their upbringing and their military service, they both suffer from PTSD. Sally, at the end, revealed that she felt her sentence was unfair, and although she wants to keep appealing her case to have a clean slate, now that she's free, Sally doesn't care anymore. Thank you all for tuning in today. And if you haven't already watched the Killer Sally documentary on Netflix, go watch it. And listen, keep your case recommendations coming. And if you love the show and haven't already left a review, be kind and rate the show 5 stars wherever you're listening. Shout out to Haley Gray for researching this episode for me. My sources for this episode include the 3-part Netflix documentary Killer Sally, various court opinions in Sally's case, and articles found in the North County Times, Times Advocate, Sacramento Bee, Newsweek, New York Daily, The Guardian, and The Daily Sentinel. Military Murder is a Mama Margot production. This episode's executive producers are Falcon 13, Jen, and Myrtle. Our newest Patreon assistant producers are Alexandria and Raquel. The theme music was created by Tyops. If you want to support this show, be sure to check out patreon.com/militarymurder, where for as little as $5 a month, you can get access to over 40 bonus episodes. Until next time, remember, you never really know what someone is capable of, so remain vigilant always. You have a fabulous week, and I'll keep digging to bring you another military murder story next week.
Mama's working on her podcast.
I don't want to.